is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Sri Lanka in trouble with the IMF, in trouble with its own people. India in contest with China. And the Solomon Islands, part of Oceania, now a contest between the United States, Australia, New Zealand, and Beijing. All of this for Cleo Pascal of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. A conversation recently she had with Mr. Kim of the Korean India population, reflecting upon the status of India. But we begin with Sri Lanka in this report from the Indo-Pacific and trouble. Cleo, a very good evening to you. I follow the news at your direction. Sri Lanka says Chinese military survey ship will port only to refuel. This is Reuters in these last hours. What survey ship? Sri Lanka. And is this the port that was built with Belt and Road money that got the Rajapaksas kicked out of the country? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Yes, it is that Hambantota port. The ship is one of this Wan Wang class of so-called survey ships that the Chinese have. They are massive. Not delighted that this ship is porting relatively very close to some of their critical naval installations are just across in southern India. And this gets down to what is the direction of Sri Lanka. Sri Lanka came to this current situation through a range of seas, through corruption, through Chinese influence, through a failure of the crops, which we talk a lot about them shifting to organic. But another component of that was the Chinese sent a toxic fertilizer that destroyed a lot of the crops. And so they got into this. And then COVID killed their tourism sector. So this confluence of factors came together, destroyed the Sri Lankan economy. And we've talked about this before. Often this can create a kind of entropic warfare situation within a country that draws the authoritarian leadership closer to Beijing. That's why Beijing isn't worried about putting countries into debt. But in this case, this is such a strategic location for India that India has jumped in with kind of billion-dollar lines of credit and things like that. And now Sri Lanka is at an inflection point. The leadership has a choice. It can go in deeper with China, in which case it's made an enemy of India, and India can do a lot of damage. Or it goes with India, and India helps it try to rebuild its economy. So this is a frontline political warfare battle that is indicative of what's being seen in many, many other locations around the world.
To recap, what I've learned from you is that the Rajapaksa family, president and prime minister, fled in the middle of the night to the Maldives and on to other places where they may or may not be extradited to face charges of pilfering. The Rajapaksas blessed the building of a white elephant port nobody uses, a white elephant airport nobody uses. That port is the one that the Chinese survey ship, just for refueling, makes call. However, they left behind a prime minister, Rick Ramasinghe, who is one of their lieutenants when they were in charge. That doesn't seem to be an answer. Do we know, is Rick Ramasinghe favoring Beijing over Delhi?
So it's kind of unclear. He's been described in the Indian media as being a weak man, maybe not necessarily, as corrupt as some others, but it's uncertain. It's in play. And countries, democracies are not one man, or woman. That's what we see in other places like the Solomons. There is opposition. There are alternatives. There are elections are possible. As long as it remains a democracy, there is a pathway out, which is one of the reasons why China tries to destroy democracies, because it wants its people put in and stay in. So it is not decided, but India managed to pull the Maldives away from China's grasp. Very similar things were happening in the Maldives, and it's a smaller case, but it helped the Indian system figure out how to start to handle it. And they did a lot of work along the same lines in Nepal, and now they're going to try in Sri Lanka. It's unclear which way it'll go now, but at least it's not just definitely drifting into China's camp, as is some other locations that we may or may not talk about.
We're going to talk about India being pressed by China in the high Himalayas. That is a military-to-military conflict. Your conversation most recently at the Sunday Guardian, revelatory, with Si-Hoon Kim, who is, and this is a long title, the director of the Captive Nations Coalition of the Committee on Present Danger, China. What is most striking, I learned from your conversation, is that Si-Hoon Kim, who recognizes the fact that he's from Korea, sees himself as Indian origin. How did this happen, India in Korea?
So India has, you know, China has this fantasy of, you know, sort of this mythical Belt and Road that brought China all over the place. But actually, India, for many, many centuries, spread out through what we now call the Indo-Pacific. And part of this was about 2,000 years ago, the story is, an Indian princess went to what's now in southern part of Korea and married a king there. And they had a lot of children. And it's the origin of this clan from that part of southern Korea. Not southern part of South Korea. And it's just part of the identity and the mythology, and there are TV shows about it and movies about it. And that sort of kind of linkage you can find all across the region. That's why there's Hinduism in Bali or Buddhism in Japan, or, you know, these deep cultural linkages back to India or with India are very deep. And I think that they're going to increasingly be of geostrategic importance as kind of Western, white Western powers, traditional colonial powers, start to withdraw a little bit. And Asian countries start to look at each other in the same way that they looked at each other 500 years ago or 600 years ago.
Cleo, this is 2,000 years, goes the story. So the memory has existed. That's Rome we're talking about here. For 2,000
years. We still talk about Rome.
I understand, but the Gimhae clan of the Kims of the Gimhae clan, descendants of Queen Suraratna from India. This is a wonderful connection. Now, Mr. Kim has many things to say about India and emphasizing that India is the solution to the troubles of Eurasia, quite to the surprise of those who have been celebrating China as the rising power. How does he see India can either elbow aside China or deal with its confrontation, starting in the high Himalayas in Sri Lanka?
Yeah, Mr. Kim is he's a young man. He was born in Korea. He came to the U.S. when he was quite young. And he's just a remarkable young man who looks at the world in a very kind of clear-eyed way. And he got involved in India in part through the issue with the Tibetans. He was, as you mentioned, he's interested in countries that have been kind of taken captive by China. One of those would be Tibet. And when he visited the Tibetans in India, he saw that India made space for all of these different faiths, cultures, communities, and tried to work together to resolve some of these issues. I mean, you know, Richard Gere has been talking about the Tibetans for decades, but India has a lot of Tibetans whom it has given a home to, unlike other countries that may talk a big game, including the Dalai Lama. And so he saw this and he recognized this as a kind of model for a way a country can be that is in direct opposition to the monolithic, top-down Chinese Communist Party way of doing things. And in that, he sees an inspiration for the region, but also the importance of India as a model, and why, and we've talked about this before, both the Chinese Communist Party and extremists want to destroy it, because if it exists as a successful model, then both of those other models, the kind of very narrow religious-based state or communist state, lose their validity as justifiable ways of governance. So he's recognized that, and he's been very keen to highlight, you know, I mean, he's clear, India's not perfect, but its strengths are so important and provide such an important model that needs to be better understood in the West. And he's a young guy, and he's did some of this work on university campuses. And he says in the article that there's seen a huge rise in university campuses in anti-Semitism and anti-Hinduism, and often stemming from the same kind of sources. He himself is Christian. So it's you know, he's got that element to him as well, which is very interesting, because often India is presented as being anti-Christian, but he sees it completely differently. So it's the sort of complex, deep view of what's going on within Asia and how it's different and how it's important that we were very happy to discuss and put in a Q&A in the Sunday Guardian, because I think it needs to be better understood.
I'm speaking with Cleo Pascal of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies about the conflicts in the Indo-Pacific region. We're headed to the Solomon Islands next, where there is certainly conflict and major visitors showing up to, at some point, contest this presumption by China that it's acquired another client. I'm John Batchelor.